So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Today's a special day for Trending during our marriage hour. My husband, Gabriel, is joining me for the show. Let's talk, before we dive into our topic today, discussing kind of the challenges of being a husband and a father and the call that the church gives men and women. I want to first answer a question that keeps coming up for the two of us, and that is, what has been the most difficult thing for you in terms of being a parent? You first.
In terms of being a parent, definitely changing the diapers, trying to figure out why she's crying. Waking up in the middle of the night, helping out in any way. I think that's the toughest part.
Just the diapers and the...
Yeah.
What do you dislike about the diapers? Let's be real.
I think that, you know, especially now that she's teething, it's been really difficult. How can I soothe this little creature? Like, that's going on in my mind constantly.
Knowing what's going on. Yeah. You evaded the diaper question, by the way. We all know which diapers you don't like changing.
Yep.
We'll leave it at that. Probably the most challenging thing for me, and if you're just joining us, that's my husband Gabriel here on Trending today during our marriage hour. Being a new parent is the exhaustion. The exhaustion has been painfully real. And I think that just this weekend, even the challenge of just being so exhausted and being at Mass, Sunday Mass, it's like, man, it's hard to get through Mass, or exhaustion in those moments where there's so much more to be done. And I'm one of those people, you know, you and I have experienced this in marriage so often. I try to do everything myself.
Mm-hmm.
And being new parents, I can't do that.
Yeah.
I cannot do that. I have to allow for the team dynamic to occur more than maybe I allowed prior to having a kid.
Yeah.
And so that was a challenge.
Yeah, I think it's been a good challenge, though, because we have been able to adapt well. I think splitting house chores and just taking care of the baby, I think we're just naturally, I think you and I have been able to tag team a lot quicker.
Yeah, we have. It's been fun. It's been a challenge. It's been fun. One of us tapping the head, the other one's rubbing the stomach.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You're listening to Trending with Timory again. That's my husband, Gabriel, here on the show. I realized when we were preparing for this, you and I have never read the papal encyclical by Pope Pius XI, Cassia Canubia. It came out about 100 years ago, right around the time when the world and some of the churches, Church of England and others, not the Catholic Church, were adopting hormonal contraception as a part of their norm. And it brought into question the idea of just marriage overall, the roles of femininity and masculinity. Around the same time, we had St. Edith Stein, known as St. Teresa Benedict of the Cross, when she became a nun. She died at Auschwitz during World War II. And St. Teresa Benedict of the Cross, Edith Stein, has commented quite a bit on Cassia Canubia and the roles of husbands and wives. And it's always fascinated me to read her commentary on the male-female role and then also juxtapose it with her information coming from Cassia Canubia. One of the big things that comes out in Cassia Canubia, Gabriel, is the idea that the husband is the head of the home and the woman is the heart of the home. And this order always has to be present. And when the heart is removed from the home, the husband has to compensate for the heart being removed, but he's meant to call the heart back into the home, that is the wife, and vice versa. If the husband isn't being the head of the home, well, the wife may have to step up and be that head of the home temporarily. Ultimately, it's her mission to call the husband back into that role. Mm-hmm. Initial reaction to the entire idea in our 21st century, 2021 culture of this struggle over the head and the heart today.
You know, there's this natural law that's written in our hearts. We know it by instinct, and we know it just by just by existing, just by knowing. We know our place in this world. We know how a proper family is structured. We know our roles and responsibilities, and I think that it's so, you know, I'm actually really looking forward to reading this encyclical, but it's so important to live by that, especially in our culture, because there's so many opportunities where we can fall.
No, it's true. There are so many opportunities where we can ignore this perfect ideal that the church has called us to and even say, well, that's just not possible. I have to experience X, or I have to experience Y, or this has happened to me in my life. And so we try to throw it out the door often. And so I think that when we have this idea of the man is the head of the home, the woman is the heart, you know, it emphasizes that the wife, the mother, has a chief place in loving within the home.
Mm-hmm.
Not that the husband doesn't love, but there's this nurturing love that only a mother can give. And when she chooses to forego that responsibility in the house, it becomes a challenge. So let's talk a little bit more about kind of the male-female challenges that occur. St. Edith Stein, in being informed by Cassie Kanubian, commenting, you know, right around the time of World War II, again, she died at Auschwitz, and she's an incredible philosopher. She converted from being a Jew to really an agnostic atheist to then becoming a Catholic and a religious sister. And in her commentary about the separate vocations of man and woman, she speaks specifically at a certain point of the distinct challenges that occur theologically and biblically that we see that match up with the challenges today. For example, she talks about how the fall points to Adam and his challenge that he'll experience and the toil with the earth. For example, she says, Adam's disobedience is punished by the loss of his undisputed sovereignty over the earth and of the ready service of the lower creatures. So in other words, earth isn't going to be obedient to him, essentially. The creatures aren't going to respond and be guided by him. And she goes on to say, by the harsh struggle with them over his daily bread, by the difficulty of his labor and his pitiful reward. So she emphasizes that now just getting work done is going to be incredibly difficult. This is a commentary on Genesis chapter 3, the results of the fall.
Mm.
And I keep thinking about how Pope Pius XI called men to be the head of the home, you know, and understanding the idea of being a leader, protector, and provider, and how ultimately the greatest challenge is you're going to have a hard time as a man, a husband, and a father to be that leader, protector, and provider. Everything's going to be up against you. You're going to toil. You're going to have challenges. There's going to be frustration. Nothing's going to go the way it should. But what should men do, and what does that battle look like then?
Yeah. Best advice I was ever given was, number one, suck it up. Number two, nobody cares. And number three, just persevere.
Mm.
That, I love that advice. Because that gives me so much direction. Like, oh, okay, yeah, I should just move forward. I should just keep going. It's not really about, it's only about me insofar as my duties and responsibilities. But everything around that is about the family. Everything is, how do I lead my wife and my child, my future children to heaven? That's really the mission. So when I decided to marry you, in that moment, I also decided that I wanted children and I wanted to have a family. And so I was ready for both. Well, you know, ready.
Quote, air quote ready.
Yeah, air quote ready. But that's what it's all about. That's the mission. And so if a man needs direction, a man is missing a mission. So find that mission. If it's either marriage or the priest life or religious life in some capacity, you follow that at 100%.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that makes a really good point. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Tim right here on Relevant Radio. That emphasizes that if you're struggling, because you will struggle, mm-hmm. it's going to be difficult. That's yep. a result of the fall, Genesis chapter 3. But if you don't have a mission in the midst of that struggle, you're going to flounder. There's going to be no purpose to why you're suffering. And I think that this mm-hmm. is where the Catholic Church gives us a distinct understanding of so-called redemptive suffering. It helps us to understand that we will suffer, but there's a mission involved. Now, big V vocation, ultimate vocation, should we say, is holiness, right? Mm-hmm. Call to holiness. But then how are we going to get there? How do we get to heaven? We have religious life. We have marriage. But maybe you're not married. Maybe you're not in the religious life. So I think the question, throwing it back out there, if someone is not married, how do you find that mission as a man so that you can persevere in the struggle that is so real for men today?
Oh, yeah. So single guy, not married, not pursuing the religious life, what to do? Absolute, unmitigated daily discipline so that you can pursue virtue or that you can build a virtuous life. Like that's at the end of the day, marriage, priesthood, single life, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, it's about virtue. Build virtue no matter what.
You said a couple minutes ago that you received great advice, which was suck it up.
Suck it up. Nobody cares, and persevere.
Okay, but suck it up, persevere, nobody cares. To some, that might sound really harsh, and in the 2021, everyone says, well, men have feelings too. We've got to be thoughtful towards men. We need to allow them space, which I do think we have to recognize. Men do have feelings. Mm-hmm. They're not doormats. However, people will hear the advice that you just received that has been extremely beneficial for you and say, well, we can't say that to men. That's not thoughtful. that doesn't allow them room to, you know, struggle or to have, you know, feelings or just be human as well.
Yeah, get out of here. No, I don't care. That's ridiculous. Men need boot camp. I'm going to be honest with you. That's the best advice any man could ever hear. The last thing that I want is to be patronized and to be given a warm blanket. I mean, if you think that this is offensive, then take a cold shower and wake up at 3 a.m. and start your day, because that's the best thing that you could, that anybody could tell you. You don't need comfort. That's the problem with men, is that in our culture, we are spoon-fed comfort and luxury. You have to detoxify from all of that. And if that requires you to go to extreme lengths to attain virtue, you will do it. You must do it. Why? You're not being crucified on a cross. I mean, we literally tortured Christ to death. We are afraid to take a cold shower. Look at that. Look at that contrast. And that's all you really need to know.
Mm-hmm. And it's biblical. You turn to Ephesians chapter 5. St. Paul gives us that great command. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved his church. And what did Christ do? He laid down his life for her. He sanctified her. Mm-hmm. He purified her because he was willing to make that sacrifice. So a question I'll throw out there is, how have you worked on overcoming that desire at times toward laziness, toward comfort?
Oh, I haven't. I'm still I'm still struggling every day. There's no way that I'm going to be perfect. Absolutely not. I'm struggling every day. When I don't work out in the morning, I feel like garbage and I like completely regret it. And then my entire day is ruined because I just want to pursue comfort because I didn't work out that morning. And so that's a perfect example of how I struggle. Even in the mornings when I wake up, and sometimes I make excuses that I don't pray in the morning and I miss my morning prayer. That completely ruins my day because I am off on my prayer and I lack in pursuing that spiritual journey and in pursuing that relationship with Christ. And I ruined that opportunity in that day. That's a big deal. And so I struggle every single day, and it's important that men know that. I think that's another really good advice, is that I'm not saying you must be perfect. What I'm saying is you must strive for perfection, knowing that you're going to fall every day. But it's about understanding the mission, and that will give you the discipline to move forward. So hopefully this isn't like motivational, because that's not what I'm looking at. I mean, that's not what I'm aiming to do. Motivation is an emotion. What I'm saying is you have that mission. You know how to pursue it. So you have that daily discipline, that self-discipline to get right back on to that path. Because you know that that's what you must do. You just know it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I want to come back to this whole idea of motivation. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here on Relevant Radio during our marriage hour. My husband Gabriel's joining me today. You mentioned motivation is an emotion. Fascinating. I've never really thought about that, but I definitely see where you're going. You know, we talk a lot, even within, for example, the church, that people go on a retreat, and then you have this retreat high, and you're all inspired to dive into your faith. You're so passionate, and then the retreat high is gone, and all of a sudden you just go back to the way you were living before. In a respect, the apostles struggled with this. Mm-hmm. What happened after the resurrection? Literally, Jesus Christ is resurrected. He's still roaming the earth for those 40 days, and Peter's like, I'm going fishing. And what do the apostles do? They go with them. They go back to their old life.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question is having to do with motivation being an emotion. And again, I want to unpack that more. How do you overcome the emotion of being motivated and choose to be motivated? Because it is a choice to live out your vocation as a husband and a father today.
Yeah. How do you fight against the emotion? It's like, it's just chiseling stone. It's just one day at a time, one chisel at a time. It's, you know, when you wake up in the morning, you have like, I forgot what the actual second count is, but you have just like a couple seconds to make a life-changing decision, whether you can sleep in and press snooze or initiate action and get up out of bed and just start your day. That's really where it all starts.
I had that few second debate this morning. My alarm went off. I was trying to wake up a little earlier than usual this morning.
Yeah.
It went off and I'm like, I'm going to press snooze. There's no big deal. Maybe the baby will wake up in 10 minutes and I'll have to get up. Instead, I could have had like 20 minutes to myself this morning.
It was so bad for me this morning. I actually got out of bed, started moving my and working towards, you know, my day. And then I was like questioning whether I should go back to bed. Like, that's how bad it was for me this morning.
I'm telling you, I asked the question that we keep getting, what's been the most challenging thing about being a parent? I truly believe it has been exhaustion.
Yeah, that's so true.
My husband Gabriel's joining me here today on Relevant Radio. You're listening to Trending with Timory. Let's come into this idea of what inspires you. Because many people are desiring to live that virtuous life. They're desiring to take responsibility as husbands, to be a leader, protector, provider, to be the head of the home. What gets you past laying on the couch, sleeping in, not showing up at the end of the day, not helping out with the family, or not even making that commitment to get married? What inspires a man to get past that?
I think the best thing that helps me get past that laziness is understanding ordered rest. Like last week I had to take a nap, and when I woke up from that nap, I was extremely productive. To me, that wasn't something that was lazy. That was something that was necessary so that I could move, so that I can continue to take care of my family. And I think that's really important. Is I like to set goals for myself to achieve those goals. And then when I achieve those goals, when I do decide to rest, it's a good thing. And it's very important to understand the difference between rest and laziness and work and too much work.
That's a fine balance for all of us to find. Okay, so with this idea, I think that I want to turn our mindset when we talk about what inspires you. Sometimes I think wives think, well, my husband's being lazy or my husband's not doing this or I want my husband to do X. Does your naggy wife's influence, for example, trying to make you do something or inspire you, like how does a wife's influence in trying to help, let's say your husband's struggling with a social media addiction. Let's say that your husband is like just sleeping in super late, barely making it to work or having a hard time performing at work. How does a wife influence her husband without trying to control him and give him like hopeful inspiration? Can she?
Yeah, I think that she can. I think so I can only comment on my own experience. And when I see you doing everything, I feel really bad. And I think to myself like, oh, there's a lot more that I could be doing right now. What is she doing that I can just take over immediately? I don't like looking at myself from a third person, seeing myself as a lazy person, looking at how my children can see me or my child can see me, and how my wife perceives me as lazy. You know, it's so important to think to myself, if I'm going to be the leader of my family, I'm the one that has to suffer first. I'm the one that has to do this or that, or I need to make sure that the kitchen is clean. Those dishes are on my hands. I'm the one that with that responsibility. I'm the one paying the bills. I'm the one making sure that the house is clean. Like, that's actually on the husband. That's actually not on the wife. I still suck at laundry. I apologize. That's the one thing I absolutely hate.
That is the only thing. The only thing. You get a grace in that one. I'll go laundry having the baby.
I'm still working on it. I admit, that's the one thing I'm lazy about. I hate folding clothes.
I think that's the one thing. If I'm like, hey, can you help do X with the laundry? There might be like that silence, but everything else, and you have this ownership of that, I think it's so important. And a lot of men don't see that. They feel, okay, everything at the home is my wife's responsibility, and I'm just going to leave that in her arms. But the beauty is, and I've greatly appreciated this after having the baby in particular, is you see that as your responsibility too. Sure, I may be home with the baby throughout the day, but you also see it's not just all meant to be on my plate alone.
Right. Bad habits compound, and when they're not fixed immediately, over the years, you don't really know that you're committing that bad habit anymore. Mm. And then your child, this actually has psychological repercussions on your child, because they're growing up during their childhood development and they're seeing a lazy father, or they're seeing a father that is doing good in one thing but bad in the other. And then that shows the child that you can be disciplined in something, or you can just be lazy your entire life and have things spoon-fed to you. There really isn't a fine balance. I mean, there's a clear line there. I mean, you know what you must do, so do it. Mm-hmm. Not just for yourself. Again, at the end of the day, I'm trying to lead my family to heaven. And in order for my child to get to heaven, my wife to get to heaven, we all must be disciplined. We all must practice that ascetical life. And that leads back to the Father. How can I lead my family to a virtuous life? And that all requires good habits.
You're listening to Trending with Timmy. That's been my husband, Gabriel, joining us during our marriage hour. I'll be right back during our marriage hour to discuss the challenges that the wife and the mother faces within the home while married.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmy on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Coming up, we'll be discussing the challenges of a miscarriage for a marriage. Many people go through the experience of having lost a child, but many also don't share the experience or share the challenges that it can pose, the mourning, and also the importance of celebrating and recognizing the human life given and also lost, yet still loved. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here during our weekly marriage hour every Thursday. Joining me just a little bit ago was my husband, Gabriel. If you missed that, you can head over to relevantradio.com/trending. We're discussing the challenges for husbands to take up that responsibility and role to be the head and the leader of the family, overcoming laziness, battling that desire to choose yourself. I want to discuss now some of the challenges that women face within the context of marriage. It's not easy, in response to the culture, to say you're a wife, but especially a mother today. The world tells you that you can be anything as a woman. But the two things that you can't be are a wife and a mother. And might I add a third, also commonly discussed by Dr. Carrie Gress, in her book, The Anti-Mary Exposed. She discusses how you also can't be a virgin in today's culture, which is true, because the world tells women and young girls from a young age all the way through older years that you constantly have to be hot and available. There's pressure on older women to meet a certain beauty standard that's unrealistic within the context of aging and having children. And also it tells young girls that they should be sexualized far sooner than is even time to start thinking about things such as that. But let's focus on this idea of being a wife and a mother. You see, the world tends to degrade, distract, and even tell women that it's below them to make this sort of commitment, lifelong commitment. And even, God forbid, you choose to be a housewife, a homemaker, a stay-at-home mom. All of these, for some odd reason, in the media, cultural narrative, the work environment is below women. Yet in reality, we were discussing just last week during our weekly marriage hour two important topics. One of them was whether or not husbands, fathers, should be stay-at-home dads. riveting conversation. If you missed it, you can catch the podcast, relevantradio.com/trending. Subscribe, listen. I'd love to hear what you thought about it. But the second thing we discussed there that day was also the idea of how the vast majority of families, parents, have the goal and hope and desire that a mom can be home with the kids. In fact, I think it was about 8 out of 10 women said that's ultimately the whole purpose and goal of financial security, so that they can be financially secure enough to be home with their children. The culture, the world's crying out with this desire, a desire to be home, present, raising their children. But the social environment as well as the economic environment doesn't necessarily allow that. We discussed last week on our marriage hour how that can be done. Working to live not just within your means or below, but below your means. The sacrifices that are made. And we had incredible advice given by many parents who have chosen to make that a priority and have worked to live on a single income. Maybe the reason why it's not as big of a priority is because although it's a desire, many women are being told, no, you shouldn't do that. That's not necessary. Your kids can survive. Kids are adaptable. What the world's saying is that kids don't need their moms. You see, we were discussing earlier today during the show how the struggle for men post the fall, read Genesis chapter 3 to get a glimpse of what happened, is that men struggle for existence. They struggle ultimately for their livelihood. It's in toil they work and provide for their family and themselves. Work is no longer going to be easy, both on a physical level in terms of the reaction and interaction with the earth, but also in terms of the battle within the self, concupiscence. But what about the struggle and battle that each and every single woman will face? It's actually written in Genesis chapter 3, the primary struggle that a woman in the fallen state will experience is the difficulty surrounding conception, childbirth, having children. Let's cut to the core a little deeper. The struggle would be that women would struggle not just with pains of childbirth, but with the painful idea of having children, of being told that they shouldn't have children. You see, this whole idea of a woman's identity is wrapped up in many ways surrounding the nourishment of the human soul, but especially the nourishment of children. We can see this in the writings from St. John Paul II, throughout the biblical narrative, saints such as St. Edith Stein and many others, emphasizing the church's ongoing perspective and tradition surrounding the goal of marriage is a procreation and education of children. But in particular, this procreation and education of children falls on the shoulders of women. How can we say this is so? Well, even St. Edith Stein, who was a Jew, converted to agnosticism, and ultimately a philosopher who made her way to the Catholic faith, became a nun and died during World War II at Auschwitz, as I mentioned before. We've been working through her writings today. And Edith Stein says, a biblical woman of Israel saw their vocation in terms of bringing forth offspring who were to see the day of salvation. She discusses this to help us understand how important and fundamental the procreation education was for mothers for their children. You see, Eve, the first proto-original woman, was known, her name had to do with being the mother of all the living. In fact, when she's gifted with her first child, she says, God has given me a son. If we were to look at all of the biblical narrative over and over again, women, their focal point has to do with motherhood. It's written into our bodies. Our very biochemical makeup, the cycle, the monthly cycle of a woman's body, culminates and works itself toward the capacity to create new life and carry new life. Hence, the shedding of the uterus occurs if there's not a new life to be nourished. And then it works its way up yet again to releasing the egg, the potential for new life, and to create the physical environment for that child, potential new life, to survive inside the womb. You can't deny the fact that biologically this is written motherhood into the woman's body physically and spiritually. And it's been at the heart of the Christian tradition and the biblical worldview. Just look at the various women in all of sacred scripture. We dealt either with motherhood or the absence of motherhood. From Sarah and her barrenness to suddenly having a child and being the mother of a great nation. We have so many people from Rebecca and Naomi. We could go on to the story of Rachel, Hannah too, Elizabeth, the Blessed Virgin Mary. All of salvation history, all of the biblical worldview rested upon the idea of motherhood when it came to women. So why is it that in the world, the 21st century, women can be anything but wives and mothers? We have the example, the human anthropology, and the theological anthropology, biblical anthropology, showing that Eve was the mother of all the living. And the new Eve, the Blessed Virgin Mary, is also herself a mother. Her motherhood, in fact, is so important that when her one biological son, Jesus Christ, God, dies, is dying on the cross, he turns to her and reaffirms her motherhood, that even in his physical absence, her motherhood still mattered. He said, "Mother, behold your son. Woman, behold your son." Now, he didn't say, "Mother, behold your son," but he said, "Woman, behold your son." He could have said mother, but you see, the idea of motherhood is so deeply intertwined with womanhood. He said, "Woman, behold your son." To be a woman is to behold and to love your child, to love your spiritual and physical, biological motherhood written into who you are as a woman. And he gave John a mother, his beloved apostle, the disciple, a mother, the Blessed Virgin Mary. Why is this significant? Because time and time again, we see the importance of motherhood for women. So what distractions are there in the world today from being a mother, especially once you already are one? Career. Finding fulfillment and pleasure away from family. Finding your meaning and purpose and identity anywhere, but within the context of raising your family, being truly present. Also, this idea of me time, that you can't have too many children, because what about you? Again, what about you over and over again? But what about your time? What about your recovery time? What about your hobbies? What about your talents? The world's going to miss your talents. So many people will even say, "Well, you could have been so much. You could have resorted to so much." You see, there's an overemphasis on doing what you love over being a good person. Don't get me wrong, doing what you love, being happy, being joy-filled is important. But what happened to saying, "How can I be a good person?" When we discern college, career, vocation, we often fail to say, "What will make me good? What will make me holy? What will ultimately teach me to image God who is love so that I myself might practice charity?" The world tells us as women, don't be confined, don't be controlled, don't be manipulated, don't be used. In other words, don't be made inferior, don't become that doormat of being a wife and a mother. You can offer the world so much. And I'll re-echo these words, you can offer the world so much, but not just in one way of being a career-working woman. That's the problem. The world says you can be everything and anything only, ultimately, not if you can do any career you want, only if you become a career woman. Only if you contribute to the world in that way. All of this, however, is a distraction. Ultimately, it's spiritual warfare telling women that you must conform to the world's idea of what it means to be a woman rather than the biblical, anthropological, biological reality of womanhood. Motherhood is a great gift. Motherhood is written, as I said before, biologically into our bodies, our minds, our souls. We have this great capacity. I don't say for perfection and for perfect motherhood, because only that is doable within Jesus Christ, in the intercession of the Blessed Virgin Mary. I'm not telling you you have to be a perfect mom. What I'm telling you is that you have to stop believing the lies the world continues to present to you, that you should be everything but. You should focus your time, talents, and treasures elsewhere. You see, a well-cared-for and nourished home life is priceless because people are priceless. You can put no value on motherhood, just like you can't put a value on a human person. That's what's so scandalous about abortion, that a child could be aborted for a few $100, $500, $600. See, people are priceless, and yet in this contraceptive, pro-abortion culture, although we may be pro-life, we tend to allow ourselves to believe that narrative, that the narrative was only created with a contraceptive and abortive mindset through the use of contraception and abortion, that you could have been a contender, you could have been something if only you didn't allow your motherhood to get in the way. But women are fighting. Women are fighting because they're struggling over this idea of motherhood. They want to be moms. Many of them are deciding they want to be a mother so late that they're saying, I don't care. I don't need a man. I'll do it without him. I just want to be a mom. Woman after woman turning to third-party reproductive technologies, putting her body through, I'm sorry, but outright hell with what? With in vitro fertilization that is so damaging and harmful for a woman's body, throwing her into early menopause, physically impacting her body, causing so many physical reactions and negative consequences because of the superovulation that IVF has on a woman, that women are going through all costs because they're recognizing years later, after being told the lie in the narrative, that they should not be moms, yet they do want to be mothers no matter what. So here's what we have to take away from this. Here's what we have to emphasize. Motherhood matters. We must prioritize and protect our motherhood that's written into our bodies, written into our family life. We're already, for so many, your moms. Don't take it for granted. But don't let the world tell you that you should be everywhere but with your child. Don't let the world tell you to just spend all your time on your cell phone comparing yourself to everyone else who's making a great accomplishment. Whether it's a so-called perfect child they're posting about on social media, or this amazing career and all of these achievements they have. So many people will tell me, oh, Timmer, you're doing such great work at the radio, the topics you're discussing. Yeah, it's awesome. I love getting to do what I do. But being a wife and a mother, the call to holiness comes first. I work hard to make sure that I'm able to get my work done when my baby girl's sleeping. And at a certain point, these worlds are going to collide. First and foremost has to be our motherhood, prioritizing, loving, and raising our children. That can't be compromised because people matter. People are priceless, and people are the greatest asset that any company has, but that any family has. And that person that's an asset is also you as a mother, your spouse who is a mother, who can care, provide for, nourish, and love a child in a way that only a child's mother can. Don't take motherhood for granted. Don't downplay motherhood. And if you have the opportunity, compliment and support motherhood wherever possible in our world today. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timmery on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
One of the hardest moments for many married couples, and if you're just joining us, this is our weekly marriage hour here on Trending, is the experience of having gone through a miscarriage. One in four pregnancies, we see statistically about one in four end in miscarriage. Many people are carrying that heartbreaking wound of having gone through a miscarriage. I'll never forget some of my dearest friends over the last couple of years have faced a couple of miscarriages in their marriage. And last year when I was pregnant and I was at very high risk for having a miscarriage, and praise God, I was very blessed in those circumstances. Baby made it to term through a lot of rocky moments at times. But I remember sitting with that couple and they're just preparing us, you know, just God forbid, you know, that were to happen. And they were sharing their testimony. And I remember there were lots of tears, but lots of joyful moments as well in the hope and healing that they've experienced over the years in the face of the unforeseen and just the worst possible moment in terms of things that they had experienced in their marriage. And yet I remember the beauty of their experience of having named their babies. I remember at one point when they lost one of their children, getting to go to a small, simple, beautiful burial service for one of their babies and the blessing that was prayed over them, whether it be by a priest or a deacon who will help in a burial ceremony for those circumstances. And it kept making me think about how rarely shared is the experience of having gone through a miscarriage, yet so many people are working through that. Couples are struggling to relate to one another as a husband and a wife mourn differently. And many people want to tell others, but they don't know how to share it. I want to discuss this a little bit more from a faith-filled, Catholic-filled perspective. Now, first, I want to address one thing that I think is very important. A DNC is known as a type of abortion, but it's also known as a procedure used to remove a baby when a miscarriage has occurred and the baby hasn't passed naturally. This is very important that we do not refer as people to an abortion in the case where a miscarriage has occurred. And here's why this is really important. Because I know a lot of people today, the pro-abortion movement tries to say that pro-lifers are so heartless because they want to remove access for women who have had a miscarriage. That's not true. That's never and will not be made illegal for a woman who's gone through with a miscarriage to have a DNC procedure that removes a baby that has died. So it's very important that we acknowledge that insurance does cover DNC procedures when a miscarriage has occurred, and pro-lifers in no way whatsoever ever advocate that for that. And all pro-life laws that are written are never written to ban a procedure to help a woman who has gone through the horror of having lost a child. So it's very important that we recognize that from a pro-life perspective before we dive a little further into that. And so if you yourself maybe have gone through a miscarriage, say, oh, good Lord, I'm being told to have a DNC and I associate that with an abortion. That is not the case. Don't let the world and their terminology in taking what is a procedure to help a woman who's gone through with a miscarriage, use that to make you feel lousy or turn that against you. I just had a woman write to me about that, and it's so important we recognize that and know that Planned Parenthood is not the place that people have to go to or will have to go to in order to receive help after a miscarriage. That's very, very important that we recognize. But let's dive into the topic of having lost a child. It happens. It happens to many. As I said, one in four pregnancy, we've seen stats showing that about one in four pregnancies, babies are lost to miscarriage. Moms and dads go through this joy of finding out they're pregnant, and then that moment of miscarriage, where often they question, did I do X, did I do Y, what went wrong? When in reality, miscarriages happen. Sure, there can be causes, but often we don't know most of the time what the cause was, or even often how it could be fixed. Although there are great resources such as NAPRO technology and fertility care practitioners that can help in these circumstances to try and unpack why a miscarriage may have happened or even to prevent a miscarriage. Did you know that? Our NAPRO doctors and fertility care practitioners have actually been able to help save some babies. Maybe this wasn't your experience, though, and you're sitting there blaming yourself, wondering what the root cause was. So many women and husbands find themselves having to trust in the Lord and His providence. And providence includes the good moments and the outright awful challenges that people go through. Many women, because they tend to place the blame on themselves and think, if I did this or I did that or I think I may have done this, must work on forgiving themselves. Not because they did something wrong, but on that blame that they place on themselves of letting go of that self-doubt and that self-criticism. Also, today it's important to know it's okay to grieve. So many people grieve the loss of life differently. Many people need time to grieve alone and time to grieve together. Each has a different grieving process. Some may eat a lot of junk food and enjoy their ice cream. Others might dive into work or a project, turn to exercise. It's important and okay to mourn, but to allow your mourning process to be a mourning process and allow yourself to enter into it and come out of it. And also to keep each other accountable through those transitions, helping others to mourn, helping others to recover. One of the beautiful traditions that many people have, especially people of faith, is naming a child after a miscarriage. Why would we name a child after a miscarriage? For some, it's so difficult and painful to even ponder that child. This is where our Catholic faith reminds us that any life lost has a final resting place. And a child lost to miscarriage, whose parents have been desiring that that baby be baptized, of course, as a person of faith, you wanted your child to be in heaven. You wanted your child to be with God. That child hasn't committed a sin. And so we hold in the tradition that those children lost to via miscarriage are saints. Although not canonized by the church, anyone who's in heaven is a saint. And so families have taken up the beautiful tradition of praying to lost family members who they know are in heaven, such as, it makes sense, these children who have committed no sin, who have been through that miscarriage process. You see, these children are part of the family, and many families will name and pray for the intercession of that child. Some have this gut feeling knowing whether the child is a girl or a boy. Others do know. And they name the child accordingly, or perhaps choose a name in this case that might be more neutral, or maybe you're just at peace having the name you have, knowing it doesn't matter. You've named your child, and that child's name is a child's name, and you pray to him or her. You see, this naming of a child is something that, although can be difficult, many have testified to the great gift of being able to include that child in the family by name, and being able to pray for the intercession of that child. Many go through with a burial of their children. The Catholic faith offers that burial ceremony. Even if you do not have your child that's been lost via miscarriage, a ceremony and prayers can be prayed over the family still and be prayed for that lost child. It's a great gift and solace from the church. Psalm 34, we read, and we know that God is close, the Lord is close to the brokenhearted, and he saves the crushed in spirit. So often a loss of child can lead to this broken spirit, this mourning that can occur. Our Lord is there in that moment, always present, always supporting. And some people say, well, I just need to move on with my life. Even God himself, incarnate, Jesus Christ, at the loss of his beloved friend Lazarus, wept. He cried at the death of his beloved friend. We too are allowed to mourn. God himself in the flesh mourned for his loved ones. Clinging to family is so important, especially your spouse in the loss of a miscarriage. So often I've spoken to women who have been through this experience. And part of the greatest challenges, and husbands, listen, the difference in mourning between a husband and a wife. Often men tend to be a little more silent and removed and separate in their mourning process. It's important that we respect each other's mourning process, but also as a couple have those times to come together, to cling to one another and communicate. And even to communicate, I just need a minute to mourn alone. I was actually talking recently to my mom about this, about how everyone mourns in a different way and how important it is to have that moment of mourning alone. And we've lost some family members over the years, tragic deaths and also old age. We had a great uncle who was died from COVID this year as well. And I was just thinking about how you find out the news, and sometimes as you're telling one person to the next, you just need that moment alone. Not because necessarily you're angry, maybe you are, but because you need that moment to be able to grieve and ponder the memories and face the reality of life. It's coming and it's going, in good times and in bad. And that can occur within marriage. But don't be afraid to turn to sacred scripture, to turn to our Lord to be your hope and your solace, to recognize that child as a child in heaven, close to the heavenly throne, interceding, yes, in fact, on your behalf, to honor that child by the naming, the mourning, the burying, the life celebrated and acknowledged. This week we celebrate the feast day of Saint Zélie Martin, an important saint. Why? Well, Saint Louis and Saint Zélie were husband and wife. They're actually only the second canonized married couple. They're the parents of Saint Thérèse and her other siblings who entered into religious life. And not many people know this, but Saint Zélie herself went through 4 miscarriages. And some have pondered and wondered that perhaps part of the reason why the Zélie children were so intent and oriented toward heaven and why so many beautiful vocations came from this family was perhaps due to their desire for heaven due to the fact that they knew and loved their siblings, their 4 siblings who were in heaven before the heavenly throne. And that this acknowledgement and recognition of life and death and eternal resting place and the saints that are existing and alive today in heaven with God as a result after having been miscarried are there interceding on our behalf, adoring and rejoicing in the beatific vision. All you holy saints lost through martyrdom, pray for us and pray for your parents.